Hello, Jenny Roper, editor of Work magazine here, popping up very quickly before this episode of What If, just to let you know that if you're enjoying this podcast, chances are you'll love Sister Title Management Today's podcast too. The Leadership Lessons podcast delves into the world of leadership and management, bringing insights, trends and advice to the ears of busy senior leaders every week. Previous interviewees include FTSE 100 CEO André Lacroix, Harvard Business Review author Amy Gallo, and kidnap negotiator Scott Walker. Get it wherever you usually get your podcasts. Have you ever allowed your imagination to run wild about the world of work, to wonder what would happen if we tore up all the rules and started again? Welcome to What If, a podcast from the CIPD's Work magazine that dares to ask the previously unthinkable.
I'm Katie Jacobs, and in this episode, I'm putting HR itself in the spotlight to ask, what if HR was a regulated profession? Would this improve practice and standards across organisations, sorely needed given the number of people-related scandals in recent years? Or would it add another layer of unwelcome bureaucracy to a business function that is often, unfairly, characterised as computer says no? After all, if you want to become a professional farrier in the UK, that's someone who spends their time fitting horseshoes, by the way, you legally need to acquire certain qualifications or experience and register with a regulatory body prior to practising on live animals. The long list of other regulated professions includes solicitors, pharmacists, architects and social workers, as well as accountants and, thankfully, medical professionals. But HR sits as an outlier, a profession with no regulatory accountability beyond employment regulation itself, and no official licence to practice in the UK and US. To be an HR professional, many businesses do expect or welcome a CIPD or SHRM qualification, but it's by no means a given. In the UK, only about a third of the HR profession is CIPD qualified, and the requirement is not always found on job adverts seeking talented people practitioners. But is that good enough? Or should the increasing professionalism of HR be taken more seriously? General opinion is that the standing of the profession has increased considerably thanks to the role it played during the pandemic, with many CHROs stepping up to lead organisational responses to the crisis. Should that elevation to the apocryphal top table be recognised by more formal regulation around what is required to be a competent people professional? Then there's the increasing interest from business leaders, boards, investors and regulators in people-related issues, from culture to equality, diversity and inclusion, skills to well-being. And on the darker side, culture-related scandals have proved existentially damaging to organisations including Uber, the London Fire Brigade and the Met Police in recent years, perhaps making the case that tighter regulation around HR matters would give the profession more teeth when it comes to dealing with ethical concerns. It's a question that some markets around the world are addressing, most notably Canada. Since 2013, provincial HR associations in Quebec and Ontario have received official governmental sanction to regulate the HR profession. According to Claude Balthazard, Vice President for Regulatory Affairs of the Human Resources Professionals Association, Ontario, becoming regulated is a game changer, legitimising the HR profession in ways that nothing else can. So, is that a route the UK and US should be exploring too? Given the impact HR can have on people's lives, should it be recognised and licensed as a regulated profession, putting it on the same level as accountancy or law? Or does the simple fact that people professionals spend so much time operating in the grey and dealing with sensitive human issues mean that regulation would be an unwelcome addition to the nuanced day-to-day reality of the average HR function? To unpack these questions, I spoke to two experts and two Davids at the forefront of the profession. David D'Souza is Director of Profession at the CIPD and a well-respected commentator on all things people and work. And Dave Ulrich is a Reinsis-Likert Professor at the Ross School of Business, University of Michigan, and a partner at the RBL Group. He's also often, rather grandly, referred to as the father of modern HR. Before we address regulation, or lack thereof, I began by asking both Davids for their insights into the HR profession and how it's matured over the years. Here's Dave Ulrich first.
You can go way back into the history, into the 20s, 30s, and 40s, when management mistreated employees. And so we had industrial relations, unions, in order to protect the employees from what management might do that was malfeasant. But I think the HR movement got real visible. That was more labor relations in the 60s, 70s, and 80s called personnel. And it was really about terms and conditions of work. And so we try to define what are the terms, what are the conditions of work, and they get put into contracts. Then I think we moved into what was called human resources, which is how do you build functional excellence, staffing, training, development, compensation, all of the functions, and how do you get better? More recently, we've moved into what I call human capital, which is how do you build people and talent so that the strategy happens. So human capital is the human element and the capital is the availability. I think HR is moving to another phase. I'm calling human capability. It's still human. That's the individual, and capability is the organization. So we're trying to manage our people and organization. And the evolution is it's not just about delivering strategy. It's about creating value in the marketplace. And so we see HR moving from industrial relations to personnel, to human resources, to human capital, to human capability. And at each of those stages, there's a set of expectations of what HR people should know and do to be successful.
And here's David D'Souza addressing the UK context specifically and why the profession hasn't yet been regulated.
The reason that HR hasn't become a regulated profession in the UK is to a degree the recent maturing of the profession. So the CIPD, for instance, is over 110 years old now. Its roots were actually in the Welfare Workers Association. So it was groups of people coming together with similar interests in a similar space saying, like, actually, can we explore the best way of doing this? But if you look at the real growth in the influence of HR, that's probably been the 1970s, 1980s onwards, the kind of maturing from the old days of referring to it as personnel, which was far more transactionally focused, to a broader suite of specialisms and focus that are far more about the impact on a business on a larger level and scale. But that is, compared to some of the other more traditional professions, makes us pretty much the new kid on the block. So if you look at something like finance, if you look at accountancy specifically, or the medical profession, their roots go back further and further. And whilst HR can trace its roots back through a variety of different disciplines, I think the challenge is, as the thing that people think of it as today, that is far more movable and recent than something like accountancy.
In fact, D'Souza adds, the UK market is already ahead of many in terms of HR maturity.
We've got a really good penetration and respect for HR professionals compared to some places around the world where actually the respect for the profession is still maturing. So the UK, the US, although you might argue that actually some of the way that HR's approach also kind of varies culturally, and places like Canada kind of lead the way. You've got lots of countries and places in the world starting to appreciate the value of the work that HR do and catching up from that respect. There are some places where there's firmer regulation around the world, but in terms of the recognition for the professional designation and standards, I'd say the UK is close to leading the way in that space.
We will return to the story in Canada later, but for now, I wanted to explore the difference between HR and other professions that are regulated. Perhaps the most commonly explored comparison is the one between HR and accountancy, with accountancy often seen as hard and HR as softer, or perhaps more nuanced. Here's David D'Souza again on how he believes the people profession compares.
There's some really interesting elements around the difference between technical skills and broader skills and influence within organisations. Quite often, some of the problems that you look at in other professions are very specific and solvable, whereas some of the challenges in HR are quite often broader. So there is a specific way to do a set of accounts, and there is craft and expertise that goes into that, but there's only so much you can do with it. Whereas if you think about the problem of large-scale organisational change, it's slightly more nebulous, but equally it's important to an organisation to do it. Likewise, medicine is dealing with a presenting set of problems, normally with one individual. HR is quite often interested in the complex interrelationships between different things, as well as the levels of technical expertise, which actually should never be ignored. If you're dealing with a complex employment law case, for instance, it is complex, but even in that specific circumstance, the interpretations are very much down to context as well. So I think it is, to some extent, particularly if you think of the breadth of it, hard to regulate in a nice, neat way, because the skill sets that you need for someone focused on well-being would be very different to the skill sets that you need someone working on a pay and reward strategy, for instance.
Indeed, as David reflects, much of HR work can come down to dealing with messy and unpredictable human behaviour. Is that something it would even be possible to regulate? Let's hear from Dave Ulrich on whether we can ever control how people act and react at work via very formal, prescriptive systems and rules.
Can you govern behavior through bureaucracy and hierarchy and regulation, or do you govern behavior through markets? I think toxic cultures over time lose in the marketplace. I tend to be biased. There's some great research, and it won a Nobel Prize, by Oliver Williamson. It said, hierarchies, markets, and clans. Hierarchies, regulation, control through regulation and governing behavior through a set of rules generally won't work over time. It's too slow. It's behind the times. I believe that markets over time regulate behavior. And so sometimes I think the regulations are a good foundation that's competence, but they don't guarantee positive impact.
And here's David D'Souza on this same question.
We operate in difficult spaces. We make difficult choices against difficult backdrops with people saying different things. You can move from making critical decisions around remuneration for a senior team for the next half decade to trying to work out how to make sense of 10 people at a party who were all drunk and something bad definitely happened and everything in between.
And, he goes on to add, while HR is often easy to scapegoat, when it comes to truly toxic and harmful behaviour, the people function is quite likely not the one to blame.
HR plays an ever more critical role in creating good cultures and creating the situations for them. But be under no illusion, it's quite often not HR actually doing the things that are causing the damage. We can talk about how HR deal with incidents that are a result of poor culture. We can talk about, to a degree, the role that HR has in that. But normally it's not the decision makers in HR or their actions that are directly related to it. And I think leadership teams quite often get an easy run on that because it's a nice place to point. Something happens, you swap out the HR director because you really want to take it seriously. If you wanted to take it seriously before, give your backing to your HR director prior to them and say, these things really matter to us. The other thing that I would say is that the profession, I know, does incredible work in the background of very complex situations. And not all of that work will ever be made public, nor should it be. There are real people involved. And I think for some other professions, accountancy, you've either processed this in accordance with what you're expected to do or you haven't. And maybe there's some more complexity around different treatments, but broadly speaking, are you working to the standards or not? The complexity that can come with the average day for an HR practitioner, let alone their job in the round, I think is vastly underestimated by the average person working in an organisation. Quite probably because they might go to the person in HR because they've got a problem. What they don't realise is that the reason they don't have more problems is because that HR person is doing an excellent job the rest of the time.
But there's no doubt that things can and do go wrong. There's no shortage of headlines proving that. From poor practice around mass layoffs, remember P&O, to bullying and sexual harassment cases. And while HR isn't necessarily the reason behind bad behaviour, there's still questions to be raised about boosting standards and improving practice throughout the profession, related to evidence-based practice as well. Here's David D'Souza on that one.
I think that notion of core professional standards is a really important one. And the more people are kind of subscribed to that, but equally the more that people concentrate on keeping up to date, and there's a mechanism to keep some honesty in that, I think the better. It's really interesting. If you look at corporate scandals, even if you look at the financial crash, what no one said during the financial crash is, so therefore we shouldn't have accountants anymore. But it seems a really easy leap for people to have with HR. And I think that's partly the maturing of the profession. I think that's partly that it's broader and less concrete. When you list all the things that an HR department could do, it's far broader than some of the other easier to define professions. But again, I'd just come back to that maturing point. You know, we need to think about what the profession will look like in 5, 10, 20 years. There'll be technology-driven changes. But actually, if we are the experts in work and change and developing people and helping them flourish in organisations, if you're an expert at something, you should be recognised for that expertise. There should be a marker of that, because otherwise it's just anyone being as compelling as they can be. So we are probably more vulnerable to the selling of snake oil than other professions.
And here's Dave Ulrich's take on how we can improve professional standards and practice within HR.
What keeps us as an HR profession from making the progress we need to make? We know a lot. You can source experts. There are journals, there's magazines, but we don't turn what we know into what we do. And this is not a shock. I know how to lose weight. And I'll tell you a secret. I'm not doing a great job at it right now. And that knowing doing gap is really tricky. At an initiative level, I know we should implement pay for performance or accountability in a positive way, but I don't build the discipline to do it. The certification issue becomes tricky because on the one hand, we want to certify that you know the basic research. I am increasingly shocked at the number of HR people who don't know basic research. There is a body of knowledge out there that if HR people don't know it, they end up recreating it, old wine in new bottles. It's just not very helpful. I think it is appropriate for HR people to say, I do know some of the body of research. But knowing that body of research doesn't make you a great HR person. It's the ability to apply what you know to the problems that a business has with customers and investors.
So, as both Davids go on to point out, being certified, even when certification is regulated, doesn't always automatically translate into making people better practitioners, whatever their field. Dave Ulrich first.
I think certification is a ticket of admission. It doesn't guarantee that you're good. It's a little bit like an attorney. I want an attorney who has passed the bar. They've been certified as an attorney, but that doesn't mean they're competent. Certification in HR is basically telling me you know some of the basic literature, you know some of the basic principles, you have a license to play. It doesn't mean you're competent. And so at the individual level, we love to separate certification from competence. And it's also interesting, I can be certified and not competent. I can also be competent and not certified. So I'm really good at doing the HR work that creates value in the marketplace, but I may not be as certified. In that case, I need to surround myself as a senior HR leader with those who are certified.
And here's David D'Souza.
I've met some really bad accountants in my time, had some really bad experiences that many people would have had with medical practitioners in that time. Regulation is no guarantee to quality in the same way that having a law against something is a guarantee that that thing therefore won't happen. It's about the consequences and how the system works to right itself and the mechanics that sit within that. And we've got an absolute key role in that as a professional body to keep driving those standards up. But part of that actually is our role as a professional body to help people understand that, want to be part of that, and provide them with value for money in their day jobs as well. Because the standards aren't a point in time. Actually, it's about the guidance that we provide to people day in, day out to help them make the right decisions with the right impact for their organisations.
As mentioned in the introduction to this episode, some countries, most notably Canada, have gone further down the regulation route when it comes to HR. But, as David D'Souza points out, context is everything.
We've got good relationships with the Canadian body, but to my understanding, it's not a total regulation of the entire profession, and it varies by state system over there as well. So what you don't have is government regulated. You can't do any activity without this. What you have is greater regulation at state level of some of the activities that an HR professional might do. So it's perfectly possible to be an HR administrator, for instance, without being regulated. But it may be that in certain states, if you want to, for instance, do the equivalent of a settlement agreement, or you might want to take people through a consultation process, actually they'd expect you to be recognised by the local body or another body that confers that kind of status. I think it's a really sensible place for the profession to end up to a degree, and that you are taking some activities. It's a different maturity journey to the UK is probably the way I'd frame it. What's interesting is people probably don't recognise the amount of discussion and the positivity of relationship between the different professional bodies that operate in this space. And the Canadian body are doing some really impressive things to champion the profession and make it feel more valued there. But it's a different starting point to where we are in the UK.
So, what would happen if HR in the UK was to become more regulated? Would it improve matters for employees and the profession itself? Or, given the sensitive and nuanced nature of the issues the people profession deals with day to day, is there a risk more bureaucracy could lead to some damaging, unintended consequences? despite the fact that any stricter regulation would probably increase the role and prominence of the CIPD, as the body most likely to take on some of the regulatory responsibility, David D'Souza wouldn't necessarily welcome it, as he explains.
If you were to regulate the entire profession, and a profession that at times relies on contextual judgment calls, I think you open yourselves up to a range of complaints across a range of different matters. And the other kind of challenge that quite often you have with the work that HR does is quite often multi-year. So how would you track back over an 18-month, two-month period that the behaviour of an HR professional or the way they'd approach their job have been a challenge? So I think you see a range of complaints. It would change the qualification market. And certainly the kind of ecosystem that the CIPD operates in really fundamentally and very quickly. Would it automatically give a fillip, a boost to the profession in terms of recognition within organisations? I don't necessarily think so. I think the way that you drive upwards the reputation of a profession and the respect for it comes through its activities.
And what impact would it have on employee relations and the perception of HR within organisations? Here's David D'Souza again.
It might make it easier in some circumstances. So one of the trials and tribulations of being an HR professional is that everyone thinks they can do your job. Maybe it solves that problem for all time because you can point to something that says, actually, no, look, this is a source of expertise. It's not just about your opinion. Just because you're a human being doesn't mean that you're expert in everything that happens in this space. So it might help from that point of view. But equally, if you look at, to be frank, some of the brand challenges that the profession's had over the years, if it makes us seem less human, more officious, more process-driven, more risk-averse, that probably isn't helpful to the profession in terms of the spaces that it needs to operate in. So part of the job is managing risk, but part of managing risk is actually enabling organisations and people to flourish. And having the constant threat, I think, of action being taken against you might actually at times hamper some professionals. Given, as I say, that broad context, it absolutely works for something like accountancy because actually it's very easy to track back those errors. Quite often when you're working in a space that involves people, it is very much not I prescribed this or I did this, but I interacted with you in that way. And that could make it potentially more problematic for professionals. You want people to be conscious of the impact they're having in organisations and striving to make that a good one. What you don't want people to do is be constantly looking over their shoulder.
Perhaps then, the answer is less about the regulation of individual practitioners and more about systemic and organisational regulation around people issues. The increasing requirements on businesses around the world, most notably in the US and Europe, to publicly report on HR metrics and people matters like culture and diversity certainly suggest as much, and present a compelling case for HR leaders to add strategic value at the very highest levels of business. It's something Dave Ulrich is passionate about, encouraging CHROs to seize this unique and timely opportunity.
Regulation applies at the individual level so that we have both certification and hopefully competence, but it's also starting to emerge at the organization level. In the 1930s, companies were reporting financial results with no discipline. So along came the SEC, FASB, and they had a set of standards of what you need to report in your financial report so that investors could have confidence in the company. And so the regulation became, what is it about financial reporting, FASB, GAAP, that we need to look at? I believe HR is now on that journey as a profession. In 2020 in the United States, the Securities Exchange Commission required reporting of human capital in their government regulation. I think that's coming in Canada, it's coming in UK, it's coming around the world. What that begins to suggest is that the human capability issues are material. Intangibles now represent 80% of a business's market value. The management of risk is not just about strategy, product, technology, it's about people. An investor needs to be able to assess the quality of risk, the quality of intangibles. Regulators are trying to define at an institutional and organization level, what does it mean to have good human capability? And I think that regulation is just in the, we're 20% up the S curve. What do we look at? What do we look like? And I think groups like CIPD and SHRM and others are going to start to figure out what is it we can look at that will give investors confidence in a company's performance in the human capability era. So here's where I think the certification needs to show up is we don't want to certify HR practices around activity. We want to certify them around results. Financial practices are around what's your inventory turn? That's a result. What's your SG&A cost? That's a result. And we want to begin to get that. What I get worried about a little bit is some of the certification in HR measures what's easy, not what's right. For example, how many people got 40 hours of training? Or what's your training budget per person? I look at that and I go, it isn't that you got 40 hours of training. Did the training have an impact on the company's ability to serve customers, on the price earnings ratio that investors care about? And so I hope our certification is not, A, it does mean you have to know what good training is, but then you've got to certify at the company level that the training had an impact on outcomes that are relevant for the organization.
With regulators around the world paying more attention to people and organizational issues, this is perhaps the most valuable angle for HR leaders to latch onto. But to return to the central question of this episode, I asked the Davies to address our what if. What if HR was a regulated profession? What impact, good or bad, would this have? Let's hear from Dave Ulrich first.
The pros is we'd have a shared body of knowledge. The bad is we'd assume that that body of knowledge is what helps us in the future. That's the con. I see people wanting to get certified. And so everybody says, I'm going to certify you and you get a little tag on LinkedIn. That doesn't guarantee that you're competent. That's the issue of an attorney. A lot of attorneys have passed the bar, but they're not competent. A lot of psychologists are certified, but they're not the right psychologist for me. That's the con, that we assume certification means competence, and that's a risk.
And here's David D'Souza to take us home.
I think it wouldn't have the positive impacts that we might hope, certainly not immediately and not automatically. I think longer term, it would complicate the landscape that we operate in. I think it would highlight the importance of the profession, highlight the fact that actually people are genuine experts in this area. And those would be the good things. Whether the good things outweigh the bad, I think that's really doubtful. And I think there's other ways of getting there that we need to keep looking at as a profession, as a community, and driving together for better recognition of all the hard work and the impact that the profession has.
You have been listening to the What If podcast, brought to you by the CIPD's Work magazine. To find out more about how the CIPD is dedicated to better work and working lives, visit cipd.co.uk. And don't forget to check out the rest of the What If series from your podcast provider or the peoplemanagement.co.uk website.